Welcome to Notes from the Electronic Cottage. I'm Jim Campbell. As you may have heard, the FBI recently declared that the number of personal computers taken over by bot networks has exceeded a million. That means that there are a million computers hooked up to the internet that can be taken over without their owner's knowledge or permission by spammers, crooks, and other lowlifes who can then use those computers to send millions of spam messages that clog the internet, to extort money from legitimate websites by threatening to use those computers to send millions of messages to a website at the same time and effectively shut it down, used to steal personal information that can perpetuate identity theft, and for other equally sleazy purposes. How did such a thing happen to a million different computers, and presumably to a million different users? The answer, of course, is a failure of security. But instead of just wringing our hands and holding forth on why people don't keep their computer antivirus and anti-spyware software up to date, let's instead take a step back and reflect on the idea of security in general, a term that generates a lot of heat these days, but in the eyes of some experts, not nearly enough light. Bruce Schneer is one of those experts, and he's posted a somewhat long and still evolving essay on the psychology of security on his website. You can find it at www.schneier.com. Schneer has testified at many congressional hearings, has published widely on security issues, and has often rocked the boat by saying that things like taking our shoes off in airports does little to actually make us be more secure, even if such largely symbolic actions may make us feel more secure. Schneer rightly points out that total security, if by security we mean protection from bodily harm, is unachievable. Simply put, security always involves trade-offs. Sometimes those trade-offs involve time and effort. The FBI, for example, is not going to attempt to tell those million people personally that their computers are now nodes on bot networks. It's simply too great a burden in time. Sometimes trade-offs involve money or convenience. The only way to absolutely guarantee that there will not be a repeat of airliners flying into buildings is simply to keep planes on the ground, which is exactly what we did immediately following September 11th. And if we're serious about avoiding the over 40,000 deaths from traffic accidents each year, we'd pull cars and trucks to the side of the road and leave them there. But of course, we're not going to ground planes or park all of our cars. Those are trade-offs that we as a society are not willing to make, even though they would make us physically more secure. Sometimes trade-offs also involve freedoms. And those kind of trade-offs, our current administration in Washington has seemed, and often still seems, very willing to make, although lately there are some signs that that may be changing. Over the past 6 or 7 years, we as a country have decided to trade off billions of dollars, and not a few personal liberties, so that we'll feel more secure. But are we more secure? And how does feeling secure correlate with actually being secure? That's the question that Schneer is wrestling with, and his answer is that feeling and being secure do not correlate very well at all. If he's right, the next question becomes, why does our perception of security, and in particular of our personal security, seem to be so at odds with objective evidence? That's a question that applies equally well to the worlds of cyberspace and of physical space. To begin to answer that question, he believes that, quote, four fields of research, two very closely related, can help illuminate this issue. The first is behavioral economics, sometimes called behavioral finance. Behavioral economics looks at human biases, emotional, social, and cognitive, and how they affect economic decisions. The second is the psychology of decision-making, and, more specifically, bounded rationality, which examines how we make decisions. Neither is directly related to security, but both look at the concept of risk. Both fields go a long way to explain the divergence between the feeling and the reality of security, and more importantly, where that divergence comes from. There's also direct research into the psychology of risk. Psychologists have studied risk perception, trying to figure out when we exaggerate risks and when we downplay them. A fourth relevant field of research is neuroscience. The psychology of security is intimately tied to how we think, both intellectually and emotionally. Over the millennia, our brains have developed complex mechanisms to deal with threats. Understanding how our brains work and how they fail is critical to understanding the feeling of security. End quote. In all of these fields, although for different reasons, evidence indicates that we humans are not nearly as good at bringing our feelings into conformance with reality as we might like to think we are. Some of that gap is probably biological in origin. The biologist James Danielli, for example, once observed that we've evolved our technology much faster than nature has evolved us. If you want proof, just go to a zoo and watch what happens to you when a tiger roars, even though you know it's in a cage. Your pulse will probably quicken, your palms may start to sweat, and your adrenaline will flow. All very useful reactions for creatures living on the African savanna tens of thousands of years ago. Yet today, we all live within 20 minutes or less of a nuclear warhead and potential oblivion, and we have no biological reaction at all. Fact and feeling are way out of evolutionary whack. We also usually tend to think that bad things will happen to others, not to us. Perhaps that's why those million computers are now robots for bad guys. Their owners just didn't think it would happen to their computers, and so got lazy about keeping their computer defenses up. There's a whole lot more to this subject, of course. Schneier's paper is 24 pages and growing. But if you're concerned about security, and especially about your own perceptions of security, in cyberspace or in the physical world, it's definitely worth a read. And read it we will, as well as a pile of other stuff that affects our life in this increasingly electronic world, and we'll report back on what we find out right here on future editions of Notes from the Electronic Cottage.